After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This podcast is brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and Ramdas.org.
Welcome to Ramdas Here and Now. I'm Raghu Marcus. And this is a continuation, in a way, of the last podcast, which was a Ramdas talk about Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. And in that podcast, I just want to mention one thing, because this is really cool. Boy, the way that this works with interaction with between myself doing these podcasts and, of course, Ramdas, and then people that are listening. So we got a comment on the podcast, which I believe her name was Nancy. And thank you very much, Nancy, if you're going to if you are listening to this. Nancy gave us a link to the actual to a video of the talk that that Ramdas and others of us attended in A Tale of the Tiger, which is not called that anymore, in Vermont, in Dharma Choling, I think it's called now. I may be wrong, but it was the talk that Ramdas referred to in the in the talk that he gave that I played on the podcast, in which he talked about being brought up to the front of the room with Rinpoche and with Trungpa, and audience asked some questions. It was a talk about Carlos Castaneda's book about Don Juan, and it is so. Ramdas, you know, commented about this whole thing, and there's an actual video of it. I was like blown away. I'm so thankful that that exists. It's kind of a little bit grainy, black and white thing, but you absolutely can see the interaction, and of course, you know, hear the interplay between the two of them. You must watch it. So just go to the ramdas.org, go to the podcast section. There it's you can get it in different ways. Just right, I think it's still up there right now. Just go to the podcast section and go to the Trungpa podcast, which you'll see that comment, and there'll be a link. I think you'll really enjoy it. Fascinating stuff. I mean, it's from 1973, and I believe it's the link is to all of the videos, and I think it's the third video that has Ramdas in it. So I had promised last time, because I also found an old cassette, and you know, we had it digitized, and it's Ramdas interviewing Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche at something called the Dharma Festival in that year. I believe it was that year, 73. And it's not very long, but it's, again, you get a real feeling for who Trungpa was and the interplay that he had with Ramdas. I mean, yeah, a lot of people, especially the tried and true blue Buddhists around that time, because let's say they didn't have the highest respect for those of us that came from the Bhakti Hindu tradition, had been in India and just had come back from being with Maharaji at that time. And of course, Trungpa played with Ram Dass and certainly called him one of the light and lovers. That's what he had a term for us, light and love. But he did so in a way, he played. He played with everybody, so it wasn't unusual. But he had a real affection for Ram Dass and for others of us, and I think he truly honored who Maharaji is. And so there was, you know, there's a lot of back and forth play around that whole idea that you can actually see in this, again, in this video from way back when. But this is a beautiful little interview. And again, it's not that long, but I just wanted to, because I had promised to play this thing, and I don't want to go on and on. I mean, I didn't get a lot of bad feedback around this. I did get some negative feedback about Trungpa and the fact that I was holding him in such high regard, and so does Ram Dass, by the way. We both think that he certainly was one of the finest teachers that had come from the East, although very, very unpredictable, enigmatic, and not for everybody. Definitely not for everybody. So, by the way, we're just back from a retreat that Ram Dass did with Roshi Joan Halifax, who is someone else I want to introduce in these podcasts. Who's got a tremendous amount of wisdom and is also a bit of an enigmatic teacher, a wonderful teacher. She's got the Upaya Institute out in New Mexico, Santa Fe. So we have some great footage from that retreat. I think if you go to Ram Dass, not I think, I know, if you go to ramdass.org, you can navigate to that footage, which we have put up on YouTube, there's some wonderful, wonderful material there. So I urge you to find it. You can write to us at info@ramdass.org if you're looking for anything that you can't find, and I'll make sure that the right person gets back to you. And again, thanks for the support. We appreciate all of the feedback that we do get, and just want to encourage people to continue. I mean, we love that feedback, and all of the letters we get, Ram Dass looks at as many as possible, and I answer as many as possible as well. And also, any kind of financial support is well appreciated. That's the only way these podcasts, everything that happens at ramdass.org, the retreats, the videos, and all of it. And we have some wonderful stuff upcoming that I'll talk about next time. Meanwhile, here is Ram Dass, Here and Now, and an interview with Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche.
Good morning. My name is Ram Dass, formerly Richard Alpert from Newton. I, like you, am on a journey of consciousness, or a journey of the spirit. And my journey thus far has taken me through academia and psychology and my teaching at Harvard, work with Tim Leary and psychedelics, and then to the East into yoga and meditation. And in the course of the journey, I have sought out and been graced to receive a number of teachings. And in fact, I am, wherever I am in the world, very attuned to the teachings that are available. Today, I am in a very interesting position of having the opportunity to share with you one of the sources of the teachings that I'm receiving. And here in America now, more and more of the beings who have teachings to share with us are starting to settle and to create a stable base for the transmission of the Dharma. Today we are going to explore some of the Tibetan traditions and do that through Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who has come to the United States, has center in Scotland and in the United States, has come to the United States originally from Tibet and has centers throughout this country now, and is in my estimation, although I don't know from which place I'm judging, but is perhaps the most conscious being in the West that I know of at the moment. It awes me to be in his presence. At the same moment, I don't take my awe too seriously, because it's also kind of fun. Trungpa comes out of a lineage, and that concept of lineage is not, spiritual lineage, is not too familiar in the West. And maybe you might start out by sharing some way for the Westerners to understand the meaning of lineage in Tibetan tradition.
I think the sense of continuity in the spiritual practice is very important to understand. That is to say, continuity in the sense of there is a living awareness has been transmitted through generations to generations. So that present teacher or the present holder of the lineage does not become entirely superstar himself or herself, and that person is fed by the development of enlightened mind that has been possessed by it, so to speak. So I think the idea of lineage is extremely important. That
you are merely the keeper of the tradition.
Keeper of the tradition, right. And there's a sense of life and the living things transmitted without any dilution or distortion at all, none whatsoever.
By ego.
By ego, yeah. Or any other desires or cultural, for the matter. And the idea is the living quality seem to have a great deal of importance.
Well, many of us who come out of no formal lineage, in this sense, a spiritual lineage of the, I mean, I may come out of a spiritual lineage, but I'm not conscious of it at this moment, still experience the spirit and then seek out this, the training which leads us to also feel ourselves to be vehicles, even though not of a formal lineage. So what's the nature of the formal quality of it?
I think that there is a definite sense of that, almost that you are completely soaked or possessed, whatever you call it, the power and the sense of a real confident of a fundamental being, extremely sane and precisely clear. In other words, if any meditative experience that you experience, maybe through books or have occasional information from some teachers, but when a person becomes completely into the lineage, that teaching becomes a personal thing rather than external entity coming into you even. It's sort of rediscovering yourself. Which is the lineage.
Again.
Right. Which is the lineage, in fact.
In the sense that you, being a tulku, are a are rediscovering who you've been over these series of incarnations. Not in the form of the incarnation, but in the essence of it. And that's
there is some sense of that you are really alive. In all sense of the word, spiritually and everything.
One of the tasks that Trump is undertaking in the United States is the building of a very firm and strong foundation for a living Buddhism in America as a tradition. And one of the projects is a film on Milarepa. One of many projects, Trump is working with mental patients, and he's working in meditation centers and with a variety of training programs. And perhaps the Milarepa linkage is to make real the matter of lineage. And what is the teaching of Milarepa that comes through the lineage then?
I think one of the characteristics of Milarepa is there is a very strong and a definite approach to discipline in which that one has to surrender oneself completely, including the sense of achievement, attainment, out of which the a notion of devotion arises. And the Milarepa's lineage is known as the practicing lineage, which is a practicing lineage. In Tibetan Buddhism general, that there is two types of traditions. One is the system of the pandits, the scholars are also practitioners, but the means are being a scholastic approach, and the other one is being the Kusulu approach, which is the part of the yoga, kind of complete involvement with the teaching. And through that, then one develops also intellectual understanding as well at the same time. So Milarepa is extremely outstanding from that point of view, that he's the first person in Tibet in the 10th century who actually introduced the very idea for solitude and the very idea of surrendering, opening, giving, and developing the idea of devotion and identification with the lineage. So therefore that Milarepa's life has become one of the prominent examples in not only in Tibetan Buddhism alone, but in the spiritual practice in general. And I think some of the tankas shows that there's fragments of his struggle at the beginning, early stage of his life.
When he was in
training,
black magic,
and when he had to surrender that, yeah. And surrender that.
He developed green nettle fur all over his body.
Something like that, yes,
being
in the cave. And being constantly tested by his guru. Mm. And finally, attaining enlightenment in one lifetime. That seemed to be
the statement.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean by attaining enlightenment in one lifetime? That, even that he got into that whole business, is already the product of an infinite number of lifetimes, or at least a finite number.
Which one,
the fact that he was even aware that there was a task to do, or that he was, that yearning had risen to the surface at all?
The preparation and inspiration towards enlightenment is only can be experienced by somebody who had very definite ideas, like in the case of Milarepa, that he was a black magician and completely accomplished the whole thing.
Mm.
And that kind of force or wind that you catch.
Right.
And then
being somebody
definitely, yeah. And then that conviction goes on, almost like businessmen.
Yeah.
But on the way, somebody loses that speed, so to speak, and that causes him to achieve enlightenment this lifetime.
Right. So you need that impetus of having been cast into somebodyness to end up being nobodyness or somebody. Yeah. Okay.
That kind of.
That still doesn't answer the question of how that all came to be. In other words, Milarepa is still running off a whole sequence of lifetimes.
And after his attainment?
No, before
his attainment. Like, I think that is also supposedly planted, that his that particular life, that he had such a extremely difficult childhood, was also caused by that previous speed of his past lifetime.
Right, that's the key. Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
Because like Ramana Maharshi in the Hindu tradition, you know, he's 17 years old, he's done no sadhana, nothing at all. And he goes off to Arunachala and sits in a cave and just goes through the whole thing. And 9 months later, he's a very conscious being.
I think there are different types of people. There's some people have extreme bad luck, so to speak, with the life.
Yeah.
And some people had relatively prepared. And some people are hardly need to be prepared. That's the different types of evolution of ego,
yeah.
Different intensities.
In our conversations we had up in Vermont a while back, we had this interesting dialogue where you said to me, you have to accept responsibility. And I said to you, it's not my responsibility, it's my guru's responsibility, or God's responsibility. And we got into this a little dialogue about that, which was in relation to Don Juan and things like that at the time. But it comes back here again to when you talk about the lineage as, after all, you're merely a middleman for it, in a sense. And so the question of where the responsibility lies is an interesting one.
I think the responsibility definitely lies on the vehicle, which carries the precious thing in it.
Right.
You know, if a vehicle breaks, then you lost the container.
You don't think the precious thing in it controls the vehicle fully?
Well, the precious thing is like a paint. You need water to put in to actualize it.
Yeah.
So the vehicle is in that case extremely important. And that keeps the vehicle in alert, so it doesn't become loose or careless and sort of develop a blind faith that...
So it's the balance between recognizing that you are the vehicle for this thing and also accepting the decision made, the responsibility.
That's right.
For, that's fine. That's a very, very delicate line to walk.
I think so, yes, yes. I think that's what means the Vajra holder or the lineage holder. Is that the power and authority comes from a sense of alertness, or wakefulness, that you are carrying this precious teaching.
Mm.
Therefore, you can't afford to make a mistake, and which perpetuates one's own awareness development, rather than the purely paranoia and sense of delight, in fact, involved.
Yeah, right. in coming back to Milarepa now, what, for in the Western idiom now, is the translation of the Milarepa story in terms of use for, say, me at this moment?
I think particularly Milarepa's life is very applicable, because that where he began his early life, his childhood, had gone through pain and frustrations, and also he's gone through a spiritual shopping in some sense.
Yeah.
And finally he found this in the final commitment. So there is a real parallel. In fact, much more so than Padmasambhava or any of the other teachers.
Especially all the powers he got and used and played with and got caught
right,
in, like all the rest of us in the West, who won powers. Yeah, that's beautiful. Is this going to be, is the film, when will the film be?
I hope the film will be able to be put together sometime next year.
Mm.
And this collection of tankas, very rare, and 18th century painting of Milarepa's life.
You tell me a delightful thing that when you went to Sweden to photograph him, that everybody that was holding them in a museum was not fully aware of their the implications of them sufficiently to protect them from allowing you to photograph them, which is what often is the problem about Tonka, because people won't allow you to use lights and so on.
I think that has something to do with the Miller Airplane himself wanting to come out to the West.
I don't doubt it for a moment. If you do, you'll be surprised yet. The far thing is that we all, I'm sure, I know I do, just feel part of an incredible force of opening or awakening or transmission, and it's like a very huge wind, and I feel very much like a leaf on it, and to assume the responsibility even as leafness blowing in this wind of the unfolding of Dharma to guide your way through it and to use skillful means in getting your own teachings is quite a delicate line. And those of you that have ears here, there are beings like Trungpa here in America available to us for teaching. And when you're thirsty, you go to the well and drink.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and Ramdas.org. We appreciate all the support for the foundation and for Ramdas's work, and we hope that you will continue that support. You can go to ramdas.org and click on the Donate Now button and follow the prompts. Thank you.